"We address especially the young people," said Pope St. John Paul II in 1978, "in an epoch when, in some areas, as you know, the Latin language and the human values are less appreciated. You must joyfully accept the patrimony of the language which the Church holds in high esteem, and must, with energy, make it fruitful. The well-known words of Cicero, 'It is not so much excellent to know Latin as it is a shame not to know it,' in a certain sense, are directed to you. We exhort you all to lift up high the torch of Latin, which is even today a bond of unity among peoples of all nations." This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, Director of Distance Learning at Wyoming Catholic College, your host for these After Dinner Scholar podcasts, and first-year Latin student. At Wyoming Catholic College, we invite our undergraduate students, our podcast listeners, participants in the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought, and our other distance learning programs into the great conversation that is Western civilization. Since much of that conversation in the world and in the church occurred in Latin, it makes perfect sense that we would encourage, and in the case of our undergraduates, require Latin as a read and spoken language. While Dr. Scott Olson is Associate Professor of Mathematics and the Natural Sciences, he has an abiding passion for Latin language, a passion he passes on to his students and to his children. He's our guest today on the After Dinner Scholar. Dr. Olson, when did you first get interested in Latin and why?
Well, I was a student at the University of Illinois, and I was actually a physics major, but I had a friend who was a philosopher and another good friend who were English majors. It just happened that we decided, I think we were juniors or seniors, that because of some space in our schedules, we would take a Latin class together. It had absolutely nothing to do with our graduating. It was purely for the sake of doing something good, you know, doing something beautiful. So we would, we'd go to class together. We'd come home. We'd stay up late at night with wine, drinking and doing our homework. pure leisure. And it was one of my first experiences really of leisure. But I guess actually to go back a little bit farther, I had attended a Latin mass. It was an ordinary form Latin mass, but it was one of the first times I at least realized that there was something really glorious happening at mass, and also something that was deeply rooted historically. And that, of course, the Latin made that a little clearer to me. So I just became, for the first time, kind of excited about being Catholic. And so I wanted to learn.
Well, after that first leisurely Latin class, what did you do to pursue the language?
Well, I took that one class at the University of Illinois, and I, as a grad student, so like I said, I was an undergraduate in physics and a graduate student in mathematics, so it was certainly not a requirement of any of my studies that I keep doing Latin, but I had the opportunity to keep studying Latin. So I did. It was the sort of thing where I would come home every night, get my homework done as quickly as possible so I could stay up until 2 or 3 in the morning studying Latin. Just kind of obsessive about it. I just loved it. And at one point I had thought very seriously about switching and studying classics full time, but a priest friend gave me some good advice. He basically said, look, if you keep studying math, you can come home and study Latin. If you decide to switch to Latin, you're going to come home and deliver pizzas. So, I think that was pretty good advice, actually.
Well, why spoken Latin? I mean, I assume you were not taught spoken Latin. You were taught to read and to decipher the ancient texts.
The first semester I was, but I had, like many people, I had studied language in high school. I had studied Spanish for 4 years, and I don't remember much Spanish now, but I knew when I was studying Latin for the first time that there was something funny going on. It didn't feel right to me. And so I looked around and I wondered, why is Latin so different than Spanish? Why would people study it in such a different way? So I had an inkling that there was something funny going on. And of course, at this time, this is about the year 2000, there had already been sort of a resurgence of active Latin speaking. And so there were these things called like the Rusticationes and the Conventicula Lexingtoniensis, where you could go and spend a week speaking Latin with people who had already made quite a bit of progress. So I think what I realized, I had an intuition about this, but it became clearer and clearer to me that Latin is a language, and like any language, there are certain just natural ways that you can acquire it. We'd all like to think that languages are these sorts of things where you can memorize certain facts and learn certain rules, and then suddenly you're Shakespeare or you're Cicero or whatever. But that's just not really the way it is. There's this process of acquisition, we call it, where you're internalizing the language, and that's kind of a mysterious thing. You can do certain things to facilitate it, but there are no magic buttons you can push to just sort of make it happen. And so I realized that just like with, say, Spanish, you know, to know Spanish, to really have Spanish, is to be able to communicate with facility and to read comfortably with, you know, a kind of visceral understanding of the text. That was exactly what I wanted in Latin. And the way you'd get that is the same, you know, essentially the same way you'd get it in Spanish.
What benefits have you reaped from learning Latin?
It's just a great source of joy, I guess, is the short answer to that question. You know, we forget that, being mostly English speakers, that English is a fairly, you know, it's a fairly recent comer on the stage of languages. You know, there's really not that much that's been written in English. If you go back just a few hundred years, you're already out of what we would consider really to be English that's like the English we use today. So to not have access to, you know, as late as the 16, 17, 1800s, people are still writing incredibly important works exclusively in Latin. So to not have access to that is just a great shame. That's one answer. It also just sort of opened me up to certain interesting questions, I think, about what it means to be a thinker. We tend to think of ourselves as English people, you know, English thinkers. So, you know, if I said, well, if I took your English away from you, would you still be Jim Tonkowicz, right? And in some ways, it seems like you would be, but in some ways, it feels like you wouldn't be. To really understand what that means, I think you have to try to do some thinking in something that's not English, not through the medium of English at all, but just by itself. I don't know. I mean, this is something I think that everyone who is comfortable with another language has experienced. So again, another answer to your question might be to say, well, I want to assert that Latin's a language just like any other language is. So, you know, we probably wouldn't ask a French speaker, what was so great about knowing French? Well, I get to talk to my mom, you know, that's nice. I get to read a lot of great things. And, you know, there are lots of people and experiences, another way of seeing the world. So Latin does all those things also.
Now, how did your love of Latin influence your decision to come to Wyoming Catholic College?
Yeah, I had a lot to do with it. Mainly, I was a mathematician, sort of a mathematician, engineer, computer scientist, and I very much loved Latin. But at a typical American university, there's a kind of division between the disciplines, so it's not typically possible, I think, to really be serious about, say, mathematics or computer science and also be someone who's hanging out in the Latin department. So WCC doesn't have that kind of fake division between the disciplines, so that was an exciting opportunity.
And you've taught here as well.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I've done a lot of the, you know, we do the Latin backpacking trips and the Latin weekends and taught Latin classes. And, you know, there's no reason why we can't begin a class with having a little conversation in Latin to get things going. And that's just a completely natural thing here, so.
I remember being in a theology class, professor announced that the last 15 minutes would be exclusively in Latin.
Okay.
And they were. Mm-hmm. Some people participated a little more than others, but the whole sure. conversation was in Latin.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Now, your children have all learned to speak Latin, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And tell us about that. Why not French or Spanish or Chinese or some language that will prepare them to make their contribution to the global economy?
Oh, yes, to make the, right. Well, I mean, I think it'd be great to learn French or Italian or Spanish. I wish, you know, I had enough time to do those things. But the simple answer is, you know, nemo dat quod non habet. Nobody can give what they don't have. And the gift I have to give my kids is Latin. So I want them to have the kind of facility that I've, with quite a bit of work, been able to acquire, but without so much work. And I'm sure, actually, that they'll far surpass me, you know, because they've had a much earlier and a better beginning than I had, so.
And if they want to learn any of the Romance languages, certainly it will be rather
sure.
simple.
Sure, right.
Yeah. Now, besides coming to Wyoming Catholic College, how would our listeners learn some Latin?
Well, start. That'd be the first thing. You know, a lot of our listeners, I suspect, already are maybe learning Latin. Maybe they're doing some Latin in their homeschool or something. I think the main thing I would say you should think about is the fact that Latin is a language. And that sounds like a very simple thing to say, but there are some implications of that. The way you're going to learn Latin is not fundamentally different than the way you learn other languages. It's not like, you know, Spanish and Russian and French and German are one kind of thing, and Latin is just a different kind of thing. You learn it by hearing it, by reading it, you know, reading things that you understand, by communicating with it, by telling jokes and fighting and, you know, all the sorts of things that everyone who's ever learned English did. That's another thing that I think is really important, that I realized, say, hearing the Mass in Latin, that I wanted to understand it in the kind of visceral, unmediated way that we understand language generally. And you can't do that if you haven't had real experiences in the language. If you haven't heard someone say, Mater, Veni, or whatever, you know, come mom, you know, come mommy. If you haven't heard that in an unmediated way, then if you hear something like that in the Mass, you shouldn't expect that you'll have the kind of visceral, immediate response that you ought to have.
Yeah, you're so, translating it in your head.
Exactly.
And hear it in English.
Yeah. So in a small way, I think anyone, no matter what textbook or what program you're using, you can attempt to make Latin communicative. You can attempt to engage the language, not as some kind of grammatical or cryptographic exercise or something like that, but in a kind of immediate linguistic experience that's possible for everybody. So,
do you have a sense of being part of the greater conversation in the church? I mean, it's been the church language for almost since the beginning.
Mm-hmm. I do, yeah. I think that's one of the important contributions that a place like WCC can make, I think, because, you know, we tend to think of the relationship between the church and Latin as being sort of rocky, or, you know, that's fading, or maybe that the church is even sort of abandoning Latin. I don't see it that way. I see that the church has had to just acknowledge that people don't know Latin today, and it's not the best thing to say go to Mass and not understand what's being said. For that reason, it's only very reasonable that the church would sort of by necessity kind of move away from its use. But it's not the best thing. The church has been quite clear about that over the years, even quite recently. I was just looking this morning at a document by John the 23rd called Veterum Sapientia, which he wrote in 1962. It's about the promotion and study of Latin, which is, I mean, it's pretty striking. I'd really encourage our listeners to go take a look at it. It's a very provocative document. He's writing it just on the eve of the Second Vatican Council, so whatever you thought John the 23rd might have said about Latin, you're probably wrong. You know, it's pretty striking the things he says about it. He doesn't say, oh, well, you know, it's convenient that we've been using this for a while, but now we should probably stop using it because everyone does Italian now or everyone does English now. No, he really makes the case that it was providential and something decidedly Catholic about the Latin language that made it not only temporarily important, but maybe perennially indispensable for the church. So that's a quite a provocative claim. And he does that by tying it to the four marks of the church. He talks about how Latin is in turn one, holy, Catholic, and apostolic. So it's not at all just a sort of a juridical claim he's making about how we should use it because we have, and this you need to know it, otherwise you'll not understand canon law or something like that. You know, he's really making the case that it is wound up with what the church is. Now, I was saying earlier that, you know, it's not good to go to Mass and not know what's going on. The church in 1962, most recently, was really trying to push the study of Latin, but it's maybe impossible to do that in kind of a top-down way. You know, if you've got young men going into seminary and they haven't studied Latin ever, and then you tell them, oh, you've got to study all your theology and philosophy in Latin, that's just probably not going to work. You know, I think what we have to do, little places like WCC and homeschoolers can do, is say, well, what could I do to help in a bottom-up sort of way to help the church bring back Latin? Because we do need people who can understand what, say, Robert Bellarmine wrote. something like 10% of all of his works, this doctor of the church, something like 10% of his works, I think, are available in English translation. Yeah, it's just incredible, you know, that he would have written so much about so many important questions, and they're completely inaccessible to us.
While vernacular languages will continue to be our normal way of communicating and doing business, there is something fitting about a universal church, a church comprising every tribe and tongue and people and nation, having a universal language. As Pope St. John XXIII wrote in Veterum Sapientia, Ancient Wisdom, his 1962 encyclical encouraging the study of Latin, quote, "Of its very nature, Latin is most suitable for promoting every form of culture among peoples. It gives rise to no jealousies. It does not favor any one nation, but presents itself with equal impartiality to all and is equally acceptable to all." Close quote. And remember, non discere vetule, you and I are never too old to learn. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.